Would you like some more tea? Ginny? Rose?
Ruby.
Ruby.
It's really good tea, Mrs. Timmerman.
You'll have to tell me where you get it.
There's a wonderful shop in San Francisco. Although it's been so long since we've been there.
I didn't know if it was right to just drop in, but Sheriff Timmerman was so good to come out and talk after the tragedy. And Ginny here, we've known each other since high school.
It's good to have company. Carl and the boys are here and gone, so I just feel like one old shoe. Sit reading old New Yorkers or doing this volunteer stuff.
Well, we appreciated your coming to the funeral when you didn't even know Jack.
It was a beautiful ceremony. At least justice has been done.
Maybe so.
Did the sheriff ever have any doubts about who killed Jack?
Oh, no. No. He had trouble with that man going way back. Once, he drew a gun on Carl, and Carl could have killed him right then. He said he knew something like this was going to happen. He just knew it.
It must be hard for you to hear people criticizing your husband.
This is driving me crazy. Carl has a very strong sense of right and wrong. He won't let me buy meat on the black market. Everybody does it. Well, a lot of people, but no, he's the sheriff, so we make do. His one concern is that justice is done and give you the satisfaction that your brother Jack can rest in peace.
I don't care if he rests in peace. I want to rest in peace. I'm sorry, Mrs. Timmerman. It's been hard.
Call me Sally.
Billy Ebaugh was one class behind me in school. Ginny knew him. She said there wasn't any way he could have done that. Isn't that what you said? That boy went out there and just shot him. They haven't found a gun. If he'd killed somebody, wouldn't he have his gun? What if the killer's still out there? They talk about it's for the sake of the victims, but nobody asked the victims. People call up and congratulate us. Oh, you must feel better now. Jack must be happy in heaven now that somebody's dead. Oh, yes, sir, that brightens my day. Somebody's dead, so I'm happy as a clam.
I don't speak for my husband or mix in his business. I have my ideas and he has his. If that's what you're here for, I'm sorry.
Ruby was feeling that if the district attorney would go ahead and investigate, that might settle things once and for all. Because otherwise, there's always going to be a shadow.
Would you like more tea?
Mrs. T.
Oh. Like a little girl.
Ruby.
It's okay, little girl. Proved any.
Yes. It's your brother. Brother.
I didn't tell Ruby. I was going to write a story, but I won't. Because it doesn't have an end.
Get out of my house.
Your cousin in Denver saw it in the papers.
Carl!
What the hell are you thinking? If I come in here, you are stupid. You're stupid! You think it's some world where there's not a Hitler and not the Japs and it's all Sunday school? It's my job to do what needs to be done. There are evil people out there, and my only regret is that I have never killed a single one of the animals in this world who need to be killed. I had a really bad dream.
I've got laundry to do.
Carl, sorry, but we gotta get a move on.
Is Nevada County better off? Ask any 10 people better off without him than with him. There's bad apples, and when you get rid of them, you got a barrel of good apples.
Fill a barrel with apples, give it a few days, then check the bottom of the barrel.
I don't know anymore, Lester. I don't know who killed him.
There's a phrase, Carl. The truth shall set us free. That's okay. That's patriotic. I prefer another phrase. Dead and buried.
Funeral services for the late William Ebaugh were conducted Friday afternoon.
Friday afternoon in the chapel of the Hooper Weaver Mortuary. A large gathering of women and some men of the Twin Cities and environs.
Numerous beautiful floral offerings were sent to the funeral.
His mother, said to reside in San Francisco.
Said to reside in San Francisco, did not appear. A procession made their way to the Pine Grove Cemetery.
There, the late William Ebaugh was laid to rest.
Jenny, it's okay. I gotta get back to the place. So long.
Hey, Jenny. I'm gonna not be seeing you, Jenny. Not gonna be able. Too bad. I better cut off my beard, because I don't remember what I look like. I might be somebody I don't even know. Cut off the beard, it's not me under there. Who is it then? Who is that guy? We better find out. Bye-bye, Jenny.
Just be a couple minutes. Lester, I'm off. Call the hotel if there's anything.
Have fun, San Francisco.
He'll have fun if I have to kill him. What are you taking with you?
We're going to San Francisco, which is what you wanted to do. I have to take a couple things. I'm still the sheriff.
Well, I forgot something.
Don't let's argue in front of Lester.
I just asked you a question.
You've held on to this thing for 2 weeks. How many times do I need to apologize? I'm sorry I yelled at you, Sally. What's done is done. It can't be undone.
Carl, I am trying to get used to a world that's different than what I thought it was. What is it, Carl? The war? Is it just getting older? Is that the way it's going to be? If we got rid of the fear, then why am I so afraid?
We're going to San Francisco and have fun.
Carl, listen to me.
Carl, the guy's out here again.
Sheriff, I just wanted... Remember me? Service.
We're headed out the door.
This is my wife, Winona. We just wanted to say thanks.
Thanks for what?
Just, I got the money and all.
That reward was not offered by the sheriff's office. We're not in the business of paying people to do our jobs.
Woody, we need to go.
I was trying to help.
I don't think we're needing any more help, Mr. Purvis. You have your money. Let's leave it at that.
Well, you found the gun. I just wanted to thank you for finding the gun.
All right, you thanked me.
He would have got the gun. He would have shot me.
All right.
How can you talk to him like that? How can you stand there and tell him that you don't support him? You said that man was evil. You were the one that said he did it every day in the papers.
Well, I wish you the best.
I told him the reason I was out there
we
was...
We needed the money because we're moving. There's work in New Mexico. We're going down there.
You'll love it in New Mexico. My sister was there. She brought back these beautiful turquoise bracelets. Of course, it's a whole different climate.
All those people that went to that guy's funeral... I think if you're overseas and you kill a Jap, why, you don't think about people going to his funeral. Japs probably don't have funerals. He's just one more dead Jap. But I don't know why they all went to his funeral.
Mr. Purvis, the sheriff would say you did the right thing. I'd say you did the smart thing. Either way, you're on the plus side of the ledger.
I didn't do it for the money.
Well, but you deserve it.
We're leaving.
Mr. Purvis, my wife and I are taking off on vacation. You can understand we've been under stress. There's always some people find fault. But you did what was right, and you did a great service to this community. Let me shake your hand here. Now, if you'll excuse me, I promised my wife a trip to San Francisco, and so Lester's taking care of things here, so if you need anything, well, you talk to him.
Sorry to bother you.
That's all right.
I didn't do it for the money.
You said that, Woody.
I did it because everybody's scared to death.
That's right.
Come on.
You found the rifle. He could have killed me.
Yes.
They said I'm a hero.
Definitely.
Well, say something.
Mr. Purvis.
God damn you, I killed a man!
Shh, honey.
Would you please excuse us?
Carl.
No.
Honey, come on, let's go.
I'm having dreams. Real silly dreams.
I know you are. Come on.
Mr. Purvis, the sheriff is very appreciative of what you did. I haven't had to talk him out of giving you my job. You did the right thing. Everybody knows that. Deliver us from evil. That's in the Bible. It's like our boys overseas killing the Philistines. Think of it that way. God's work.
Reason I'm not in the army is I got bad eyes.
Come on.
Well, we had a wonderful time in San Francisco. He even made it through the opera. We're doing better. We've had rough times before. They talk about look at the big picture, but I believe the big picture, that just makes you miserable. Better you look at what's right in front of you. Look at a flower. Look at the art museum. Look at the pumpkin pie. Just get through till tomorrow. And tomorrow it's a whole new world.
I'm really proud of my boys. All my boys. Jack was a war hero, you know. He was in the papers. My wife, she's not well, but my daughter takes care of her. Neither one of them don't talk much. War's over soon. Price of hogs doing good.
I miss Nevada County. Not that I'm complaining. I like it down here. It's making almost $200.
We like it here. It's really beautiful. The colors in the desert. Woody's getting good pay. Really good. It's good to be in a place where he doesn't have to be a hero. That's the great thing about America. You can always move. It's some big government thing. I don't know what it is, but you get the feeling that you're part of something really important. Maybe something that helps the war. Make a better world, nothing to be afraid of. Building the future. And all the past, that's dead and buried. Dead and buried. I wish he'd talk more.
You are listening to Long Shadow. This is Hitchhiking Off the Map.
If you missed some of it or would like to recommend it to friends, visit our website. The whole play is there for listening anytime, www.hitching.org.
As well as all the previous 90 shows in our 3 years on the air. Some credits, and then we'd like to talk a little more. In Long Shadow, the actors were Philip Sneed, Gary Wright, Carolyn Howarth, John Sousa, Karen Castle, Scott Gilbert, Paulette Gilbert, Michael Moorman, and Sharon Winnegar. The text is by Conrad Bishop and Elizabeth Fuller and was developed during the course of improvisational workshops with the Foothill Ensemble. Music and engineering by Elizabeth Fuller, directed by Conrad Bishop. Thanks to KVMR-FM of Nevada City for audio resources, the Nevada County Historical Library, and the Flint Ridge Foundation, James Irvine Foundation, National Endowment for the Arts, and the California Council on the Humanities for funding. Special thanks to Gary Wright for giving us this story, and to Philip Sneed for arranging our residency with Foothill.
And to Jacqueline, Les, and the other actors who weren't in the cast but brought their own creativity and perspective into the play. There are a lot of people's hearts contained in the text of this play.
So a question that we got a lot from the audience and from the press, how close is the play to fact? I mean, we're sort of willing to let Shakespeare say what he wants about Macbeth and Richard III, no matter how absolutely off the historical mark it is. But this is something I think we ask more about contemporary historical plays.
Well, the kinds of reported fact that you could, and we in fact did, get from newspapers, those things are true. We're assuming that the newspapers didn't make it up out of whole cloth, unlike today. So there's that level of truth. And then everything that happens behind closed doors or within the privacy of somebody's mind or imagination is obviously fiction.
It just has to be projected from what we happen to know or surmise about the rest of humanity.
The same thing is true in the kind of novelizations of real things. I mean, nobody was there to actually know what somebody said, but we accept the fact that it might be real because it sounds about right.
And there are some things like when it's suggested that the rifle may have been planted. Well, this is a surmise, but in this case, it's based on the fact that the rifle wasn't found for 3 days despite extremely extensive search of the cabin. And then it was published in the paper that it was found, and it looked to be about having been in there about 3 days. And then there was a correction the next day to make it sound as if it had been in there just a little bit longer. That may be purely a surmise. And yet, on the other hand, there are a few cases in American history where such things happen.
Right. And as far as the people are concerned, most of them are based on individual real people or composites of real people. The family of the sheriff still is in the region and still is prominent. And the first murder victim, the young veteran who returned to be shot while he was hunting, his name actually was Henry Lewis. We call him Jack Upchurch in the play. There is quite a bit of his family still around. There isn't any family of Bill Ebaugh that we've been able to discover. He had an interesting childhood from what is documented. He wasn't raised by his parents. He was raised by his grandparents. His mother just took off for San Francisco and left the kid with the grandparents. And as far as anybody knows, she never even came back for the funeral.
One of the things we also found in the process of looking at things in the paper or looking at things in some of the retrospective sources where people had actually had a chance to talk to people who were closer to the scene time-wise, was the huge range of rumors about what actually happened. I mean, it was pretty well accepted, I think, that, all right, well, it's over and done with. And yet, people's memories of what was going on in the rumor mill of the time was extremely varied, and we even got in post-show discussions with audience new thoughts about this that we always heard in our family, that what happened was, and it ranged wildly.
Well, that's to be expected because the whole thing was interrupted. There never was an investigation. There never was a trial. It was just a manhunt.
A trial in the newspapers, yeah. One rumor was that what had actually happened to the young man was that he came across the hideout of a meat smuggling ring. Meat was rationed at this time, of course, and so you could be quite profitable selling black market meat. There were lots and lots of cattle disappearing in the area. There were rumors that the sheriff was involved in this. There were rumors that the family itself had a party earlier that week, and there was between the brothers, and one of the brothers killed the other brother. It just went on and on and on. And of course, it's possible that Bill Ebaugh was the murderer.
Yeah.
Whenever we start on a project, we have some kind of initial fishhook that reaches out from and it grabs us. But it's really hard often to know what it is exactly that really interests us and makes us gravitate to a story and then spend a good portion of our life working it out. And I think it really is the process of exploring the story that starts getting us some sort of clue as to, well, what is it we have at stake in this?
One of those things is the alienation, the demonization of the other, and the function of the media in doing that, painting people as towelheads or whatever the current slang of the day is, that makes them not worthy of the same kind of compassion that we have for ourselves. But then the other thing that has been mentioned before is this creation of multiple realities where people all line up behind the appropriate starting gate of their particular viewpoint. And then the bell rings, and they all take off madly in different directions.
Yeah, I think of that, you know, I think very personally about that. I'm trying to think, when is the last time I had a political discussion or a discussion of social issues with someone who didn't, from the outset, agree pretty much 95% with what I was saying and vice versa? I think everyone really seeks out the support of their own worldview, and I suppose we need that desperately. That is a part of socializing. That's a part of talking about, well, did you like this movie, whatever it is. But it also starts creating blind spots.
Yeah, there's the descriptive term now of the echo chamber in politics.
Yes, yes.
Where
yes.
You only hear back what your own voice would say. And yeah, it does. It blinds us and it lets us keep straying further and further and further away from what might be a commonly held reality.
Well, this is Long Shadow, and it is a long shadow. I was thinking, our own dramatic work for the stage is probably just about as varied and diverse and all over the map as this radio show is. That's just the way we do it. But we have to periodically look at, well, what is the continuity between one project and another? Right now we're about to open a new play, Drake's Drum, which is about Sir Francis Drake. And that excursion into the life of what was for England a mythic hero even in his own time. Yeah, he was a pirate, but pirates are just fine, you know. And he played a part in saving England from the Spanish invasion attempt. But his reputation in his own time and for centuries thereafter was far outsizing his literal achievements. And I guess that whole process of creating demons for ourselves out of our own realities, the flip side of it is creating heroes.
Yeah.
I'm not sure which is more insidious. So, thanks for listening. And if you're in the North Bay, on the final Friday of each month, we produce a sort of performance party that's unique to Sonoma County, the Hitchhiker's Cabaret Cauldron, a wonderful celebratory performance event. Schedules on the website, www.hitching.org. This month, October 28th.
And next month, November, on Hitchhiking Off the Map, in honor of Veterans Day, we are repeating a feature we produced last year, War Veterans, the voices of people from all the way from the Lincoln Brigade to the present, telling us about their experience of what made them sign up, what it was like to be there, and what it was like to come back. This is Elizabeth Fuller.
And Conrad Bishop. Peace and joy.
And when you're dealing with history and all the endless wrong turns and traps of history, the stuff that just keeps repeating itself, you start thinking, how do we ever get out of this? So we'd like to finish with a poem by Larry Robinson.
Wherever I am, I notice exit signs. Most seem to be printed in Times Capital. I particularly like the lighted ones, even though they can distract you from the movie. The green ones are the most common, although there are a fair number of red ones. Once in a great while, you can see a luminous blue one, glowing like a sapphire in the dark. Even printed paper signs taped above a doorway give me a warm feeling. I must admit, though, that doors saying emergency exit only give me pause. When you open them, all kinds of things happen. Lights flash, bells and sirens go off, and people get very upset. Sometimes they yell at you or threaten to eject you from the premises. I open them anyway. But my favorite exit sign is the story of Shakyamuni, who planted himself under a bamboo tree, vowing to sit until he awakened, and kept his vow. That one shines like a beacon through the darkest night.